Today's shiur is Perek Shalosh Ve'esrim Mehilchos Ishus, Chapter 23 of the Laws Concerning Marriage. Halacha Aleph, Paragraph 1. Ha'isha shehisneis al barwa levatel schus midvarim shezocha behem habal. If a woman stipulates that her husband is to waive one of the rights to which he is normally entitled, such as, for example, the law that entitles him to eat the fruit of her property, profits of her estate, or to inherit her estate if she dies. So if the woman stipulates that the husband should waive one of his rights, in kasavla v'oda arusa kodem hanesuyin ein etzarech liknas miyadei ela kol ma shekasavla kayim. If the husband yields his right in writing while she is still betrothed before the wedding, he doesn't have to ratify it with a kinyan, with a symbolic act that demonstrates his sincerity. Rather, all that he has written for her is valid. The reason for this is very simple. Since he has only betrothed her, and the wedding had not yet taken place, he is not yet entitled to all these rights, so it's very easy for him to waive it. However, the Rambam concludes, V'in kasav la'acha hanisuyin, tzarech liknas miyado. If, however, he writes this to her, that he waives his rights after the wedding, the second stage of marriage, then there is a need to have a kinyan. That means that you have to go through a symbolic act that demonstrates his willingness to waive his rights, as would be the case in any transaction where a kinyan is required. Halacha Beis, paragraph 2. Hisna ima shelo yiyu lo din udvarim bin chaseha. Im machra v'nasna michra u'matnasa kayim. Aval ochel perasein kol zman shehim b'shusa. If the husband stipulates to his wife that he will lay no claim to her property, then the law is as follows. If she sells her property, or she gives it as a gift, the sale or the giving of the gift is valid. However, the husband is still entitled to benefit from the fruits, the profits of her property, as long as they are still within her jurisdiction before she sells it or gives it. Because we assume that he only waived that aspect of her not being able to sell the property, which is the least likely thing that she would do anyhow, that's what he waived. But he didn't waive the more important right that he has, that when she has the property, he can benefit from the property. V'in kanu miyado k'shehi arusa, she'ein lo din udvarim bin chaseha, hare silik atzmei meguf hakarka, ve'ein lo bin chaseha peris l'olam. Now if, the time that she was only betrothed to him, he went through this symbolic act, this kinyan, and the kinyan was enacted to the effect that he will lay no claim to her property, he has thereby removed himself from the body of her land, and is therefore entitled to no fruits, to no benefits of her property forever. The reason for this is that since she was only betrothed to him, there was no need for the kinyan. The fact that he made the kinyan enhances the rights of the wife, that even the fruits, the benefits of the property, he is no longer entitled to. The afilu irer al kinyano v'amar lo ala b'dayti she'ein li peiris m'pnei kinyan ze ela she'im machra michra kayam she'ein adam nosi isha b'lo nechassim ein shomin lo ela kvar silek atzmo miguf hakarka. Now, even if the husband contests this whole kinyan and he says, it never entered my mind that by this symbolic act, this kinyan, I would be deprived of the benefits of her property, my intention was merely to concede that if she made a sale, it was to be valid. For no man would marry a woman without any property. No attention need be paid to him. But because of this kinyan that he made, which was unnecessary, he has already removed himself from the body of the land involved. Halacha Gimel, paragraph 3. Hisna imo shelo yochal peros nichaseho. If the husband stipulates to his wife that he is not to enjoy the fruits, the benefit of her property, if that's the stipulation he made, he may not enjoy it. What do we do? The produce involved should be sold, and the proceeds used to purchase another parcel of land, of which he will be entitled to have the benefits, to eat the fruit of that property. Shelo silek atzma elam peiros nechasim elu bovad, because he has removed himself from the benefits of that particular piece of property, only that piece, no other piece. In other words, he has restricted himself from the fruits of the property, but not from the fruits of the fruits. Halacha Dal, paragraph 4. Hisna ima shelo yochal peiros nechaseha velo peiret peirosein. Lochin haperos v'konin behem karka, v'lochin peros karka zu v'konin behem karka shnia, v'hu ochel peros elu shehem peros. If the husband stipulates with his wife that he will not benefit the fruits from the fruits of her property, and he will not even benefit from the fruits of the fruits, what do we do now? We take the fruits, and with those fruits, with those profits, we purchase land, and then we take the yield of this land. And with that, we buy another parcel of land. And then he can eat the fruit, the benefits he's allowed to enjoy of this second parcel. Because this turns out to be the fruits of the fruits of the fruits. And that he did not restrict. V'chein hadavar tamid, ad sheyasne ima shelo yiyulo lo peros v'lo peret peroseim ad liolam. V'achar kach lo yiyulo peros b'chayeha. And the same thing will go on until he makes a stipulation that he should have no fruits, neither the fruits of the fruits, ad infinitum. In other words, forever and ever. As far as it goes, he should have no benefit from them. Then he will no longer be entitled to have any benefits from the property as long as she's alive. But if she dies, the Rambam concludes, he inherits everything. Halacha Hey, paragraph 5. Hisna ima shelo yirushena, hareza lo yirushena. If the husband stipulates with a wife that he should not inherit her, he does not inherit her. However, as long as she's alive, he is entitled to benefit from the fruits of the estate. Likewise, if he stipulates with her that he should inherit only part of her estate, or if he stipulates with her that if she should die without children, then her property should return to her father's house. All these stipulations are valid. Halacha Vav, paragraph 6. However, when does the foregoing apply? That the husband does not inherit the wife. Shehisne ima kodem shetinase. Shehanach lahabola laodam shalom mishpachto. Masnole shalo yirashena kodem shethei ruyalo. This is only if he made the stipulation before she is married, inasmuch as in the case of an estate that comes to a person from outside his own family, the person may waive his right to it only before he becomes entitled to it. However, if he makes the stipulation after she is married, the stipulation is null and void, and he remains her heir, as we have explained. That was an early chapter, chapter 12, that any stipulation that involves inheritance is null and void, even though it involves monetary matters. Because the Torah clearly states that this cannot be waived, the actual law of inheritance. Halacha Zayin, Hisna ima achar nisuyin, shelo yiyulo din udvarim binuchaseha, velo bepeira periseha ad olam, bichayehu uvemosa, hariza eina ochel peiris klol, avle mesa yirushena, kamosha biyanu. If the stipulation that he makes with her is after the wedding, that he is to lay no claim to her property, nor to the produce, the fruits of its fruits, ad infinitum, both during her lifetime and after her death. The law is that he has no right to any of the benefits whatsoever. If she dies, however, he is her heir, as we have explained, that he can't waive that right. Halacha Ches, paragraph 8. Habal shehotzi hotzos hanichzi milug, bein shehotzi mi'at, v'ocha peres harbe, bein shehotzi harbe, If the husband incurs some expense in connection with the milug property, we already learned before that nichse milug means the properties that the wife brings into the marriage, that the wife is totally responsible for it in terms of the principal. And if there's any loss to the property, it's her loss, as opposed to nichse tzon barzo, the iron she property, where the loss and the benefits, the appreciation and depreciation, are the husband's. Now, in the case of nichse milug, the husband is entitled to eat the fruits, in other words, to benefit from that property. Now, if the husband incurs some expense in connection with this type of property, whether his expense was small but the benefits he enjoyed were large, or whether the expense was large and the yield he enjoyed was very small. Even if it was only one dried fig consumed by him in a dignified manner, or only one dinar's worth consumed by him in a hasty fashion, or even if he bought with the yield of what he had spent no more than one bundle of shoots of vine, what he has spent is spent, and what he has enjoyed, he has enjoyed. And if he decides to divorce her, he cannot lay claim to his expenses. He cannot get back his expenses. Halacha Tes, paragraph 9. V'chein im nafu lo ksafim b'makim rachok. V'hotzi aleihim hotzaz atche heviyam, o atche hotziyam miyad misha hayu etzlo. V'lokach behem karka v'ocho perusel kashir, masha hotzi hotzi, u'masha ochal ochal. Similarly, if the wife comes into monies located in a distant place, and the husband incurs some expenditure in bringing them over, or in recovering them from the person with whom they were deposited. And if he then purchases land with these monies, and enjoys the yield thereof, up to the aforementioned minimum amount, what he has spent is spent, and what he has enjoyed, he has enjoyed. Again, he has no right to claim that he had spent so much, and he wants to get that money back. Hotzi v'lo achal, o sha'achal pachas makashir, shamin kama shehishbichu, v'sholon oso kama hotzi. If, however, he incurs the expenditure, he put a lot of money into it, but he enjoys nothing, or enjoys less than the aforementioned minimum amount, an estimate should be made of the property's appreciation, and he should be asked how much he had spent. And this is what we do. Im hashavach yaser al hahotza, yishavu benikitas chayfetz kama hotzi v'notel hahotza. V'im hahotza yisera al hashavach, ein lo min hahotza el kashir hashavach u'bishvua. If the appreciation exceeds the expense, he must give an oath while holding a sacred object as to how much he had spent, and may then be reimbursed for the amount spent. If the expenditure exceeds the appreciation, he is entitled only to the amount of the appreciation and must give an oath. The Rambam continues in Halacha Yud, paragraph 10, Bamed Dvarim Amurim, when does the foregoing apply? That we say whatever he spent, and whatever he ate, b'migarish, if he is divorcing his wife. But if the wife is the one who rebels against her husband and she demands a divorce, if, however, the wife is guilty of rebellion against her husband, and even if the yield enjoyed by him is large, an estimate should be made of it, and the amount deducted from the reimbursement due him for the expenses incurred. He may then receive the balance after giving an oath. For a man does not add to his wife's possessions with the intent that she should then take them and leave on her own. Likewise, if a man incurs some expenditure in connection with the property of his wife who is a minor, and she thereupon exercises her right of refusal, as we learned before, that if a minor is betrothed by her mother or brothers, in which case the marriage is only valid rabbinically, she doesn't need a divorce. She can just go to the two in front of two witnesses and say she refuses to be with her husband. That's called mayon. If she exercises that right, an estimate should be made of the yield enjoyed by him, of his expenses, and of the property's appreciation, and these amounts counted against his share had he been a tenant, inasmuch as he had acted with her permission. In other words, if someone goes into someone else's property to work in that property, and he is to get paid not a salary, but a certain percentage, that is called an aris, whether it's a third or a quarter of the property, that is what he gets, because he had a right to be in the position of taking care of his wife's property. That's the case with every husband. The reason why the rabbis wanted him to get this type of percentage, because if the husband would not be entitled to this, they were afraid that he might not take care, he might neglect his wife's property, thinking that she might leave him, because it's so easy for her to make this refusal. That's why they guaranteed that he would get at least this amount, so that he would take proper care of his wife's estate. Halacha Yud Aleph, paragraph 11. Minhagos rabos yesh ben adunya. The Rambam tells us that with regard to Nedunya, that is the dowry that a woman brings into her marriage that the husband takes responsibility for returning to her in the event that he gives her a divorce. There are many customs concerning this dowry. Yesh mekoma shenahagu sheyichtavu baksubos hanadunya yaser al demeha b'shlish or b'chomesh or b'mechza. Kigon shetia hanadunya meya b'kosvim sheichnisa meya b'chamishim k'di laharbos b'fnei ha'am. There are places where the custom is to increase the amount of the dowry as specified in the ksuba by either 1/3 or 1/5 or 1/2 above its actual value. For example, if the dowry is 100 zuz, the ksuba will state that the wife brought in 150 in order to make it appear larger to the public. However, when she comes to collect the ksuba, she can only collect 100. In some places, however, the custom is to reduce the amount, so that if she agrees to bring to the husband utensils worth 100 zuz, she actually gives him utensils worth 120 or 150, although the ksuba states that she brought him only 100 zuz worth. The reason for this custom is that sometimes people don't want to appear as if they have so much. Therefore, they would reduce the amount so that they would not give the appearance of being wealthy. Then there are those places where the custom is to state the true amount, 100 zuz for 100 zuz. V'yesh mekom shenagu sheyiten ha'ish moas lefi hanadunya davar katsuv shetiskashet bo hakala v'siknu bo b'samim v'kiyotze behen. In other places, the custom is for the groom to give the bride a sum equivalent to the value of the dowry, and what does she do with this? With this, she might adorn herself and buy fragrant spices or the like. V'yesh mekom sheyachnes ha'ish shum mishalo la'isha v'yitzdarif lund niyasa lehisnoz bo. And in other places, the groom adds to the bride's dowry some accessible articles of his own in order to boast about it, as if to say that he got even more dowry from his wife than what she really brought to the marriage. Halacha Yud Beis, paragraph 12. Hanose stam, kose venosin kiminig hamedina. If a man weds a woman without specifying about the amount of the dowry in the ksuba, he must write and repay according to the custom of the particular country. Same would apply to the woman. If she agrees to bring in a dowry, she must follow the local custom. And when she comes to collect her ksuba, she is paid what is in her ksuba, and that's the payment that follows the same local custom. The Rambam tells us a very interesting and important law. In all these similar matters, the local custom is the basic principle that governs the rule, provided that this custom prevails all over the particular country. It has to be an accepted custom. Halacha Yud Gimel. Ish v'isha shehayu b'neim shiduchin v'omer lo kama at machnesesli. Kach v'kach. V'omer lo v'kama atanosin li, o kosev li. Kach v'kach. If a man and a woman are negotiating concerning marriage, and he says to her, how much will you bring me? To which she replies, so much and so much. And then she asks him, and how much will you give me or write for me? To which he replies, so much or so much. V'chein ha'av shepasuk al yedei b'no u'bito, kama atanosin lebincha, kach v'kach, v'kama atanosin lebitcha, kach v'kach. And similarly, if the two fathers are negotiating in behalf of the son and the daughter, respectively, one of them asks, how much are you giving in behalf of your son? And the other one replies, so much and so much. And then the other one asks, how much are you giving in behalf of your daughter? To which the answer is, so much and so much. Amdu v'kidshu, kanu osam hadvarim. Once the two parties perform the betrothal, each is entitled to the property stipulated in the negotiation. And even though there was no kinyan, there was no formal act that demonstrates will and sincerity on both sides, even if that was absent, they are still entitled to the property stipulated in the negotiation. Ve'elu heim hadvarim haniknim ba'mira. And these are the things that are acquired by verbal declaration only, without the benefit of a kinyan. And the reason, the rationale behind this is, because of the joy and the satisfaction of the fact that they are getting married, they have such good intentions to one another that when they resolve verbally to make these commitments, we don't have to have a kinyan. This takes the place of the kinyan. However, the Rambam qualifies this in the next halacha, Yudalit 14. B'med dvarim amurim b'shepasuk ha'av l'bito ben k'tano ben g'dola. U'pasuk ha'av l'vno u'b'nesuyin rishonim sh'dayta shel adam krova eitzel b'no u'mirov simchasa b'nesuyin ha'rishonim gamar u'makna lo ba'amira. When does this apply? When it is the father who comes to an agreement in behalf of his daughter, whether she is a minor or has come of age, or in behalf of his son, and it's the first marriage. For a man feels close to his child, and therefore, because of his great joy at his child's first marriage, a verbal declaration suffices that it is an indication that the transaction is complete and ratified. There's no need for a kinyan. Aval och shapasuk lachosa, o isha shapasuk labita, vechen shakrovim, vechen haab shapasuk libno olavito binisuin shneim, lokano osam hadvarim achi yiknu mide haposuk sheitin kach vekach. If, however, it is a brother who agrees on behalf of his sister, or a mother who agrees on behalf of her daughter, or any other relative, and similarly, if the father agrees in behalf of his son or his daughter at the second marriage, the verbal declaration alone does not suffice until it is ratified by a kinyan, a symbolic act demonstrating their will to go through with this commitment. And the symbolic act has to be on the part of him who agrees to pay such and such a sum. He is the one who has to make the kinyan to show his resolve. Halacha Tezvav, paragraph 15. Ha'av shepasuk al yedei bito lakonsa habas osa hamatana achiyichnas osa bailo. If a father makes such an agreement on behalf of his daughter, she does not acquire title to this gift until her husband has consummated the marriage. V'chein ha-ben lo kana achiyichnos. Shekol ha-posik ein ha-posik el omnas lichnos. The same thing would apply to the son, that he does not acquire title to this gift until he has consummated the marriage. And the reason for this is, shekol ha-posik ein ha-posik el omnas lichnos. Because whoever makes such an agreement does not make the agreement unless the marriage is to follow. If the marriage is not to follow, they never really wanted to make the agreement to give whatever gift it is. L'ficha chaposik moz l'chasano, u'meis kodem shiichnos, v'naf l'fnei achiv li'yibum, yachal ha'av loma l'yavam l'achicha ha'yisi rotzaliteng, u'lecha eni rotzaliteng. Therefore, if a man agrees to pay money to his son-in-law, and the latter dies, the son-in-law dies before consummating the marriage, so that the bride becomes subject to levirate marriage, that means she has to marry the son-in-law's brother. In this case, the father may say to the son-in-law's brother, I agree to pay the money to your brother, but not to you. And this applies even if the first brother was an ignoramus, while the second is a scholar, and even if the daughter is willing to marry, and she wants to marry the son-in-law's brother. And even so, the father is not obligated to make good on his commitment to give the gift for this marriage. Halachat Hezayin, paragraph 16. Haposik moz l'chasano v'holo cha'avlum dina acheres. Yecholi hi loma labal ani lo pasakti al atzmi. Mo ani yecholo lasos. O kenos b'lona dunya o patene beget. If the bride's father agrees to pay money to his son-in-law, and then he departs to another country, now that he's not there to give the money, the daughter may say to her husband, I made no agreement in my own behalf, what can I do? So you have a choice, either consummate the marriage without a dowry, or release me with a get. However, if it's she who made the agreement in her own behalf, but now finds that she's unable to fulfill it, she must wait until she can afford what she had promised, or until she dies. But then the Rambam asks the question, why can't she release herself by way of rebellion? The fact that she demands a divorce would make her into a rebellious wife, in which case she would be divorced. The answer is, Hamaredes v'hiarusa habal rotza l'kansa v'hiina rotza avozu eina bal rotza bo achatitin hanadunya shepaska v'hi rotza bo shehareya marislo o knos o petor. Because in the case of a woman who is rebellious while yet betrothed, it is the husband who wishes to consummate the marriage with her while she does not. Here, however, it's the opposite. It's the reverse. The husband who doesn't want her until she gives him the dowry that she agreed to supply. But she wants him, since she says to him, consummate the marriage or release me. So the law of the rebellious woman would not apply over here. When does the foregoing apply that we let her wait until she can provide the money or until she dies? That is if she's an adult, if she's of age. But if she's a minor and she made an agreement in her own behalf, the groom is compelled to either give her a get or he should consummate the marriage without the benefit of a dowry, because her stipulation, her agreement, is meaningless since she was a minor. Halacha Yedzayin, paragraph 17. Anosi isha paska imo sheyia zan as bita kach v'kach shanim chayav lozen osan shanim shekibel alatzmo v'hu sheyasto al davazeh b'shasa kedushin. If a man marries a woman who stipulates to him that he is to maintain, to feed her daughter for such and such a number of years, the husband is obligated to provide the food for her, for the daughter, for the number of years agreed upon by him. But this is true provided that they have made the stipulation at the time of the betrothal. However, if it was not made at the time of the betrothal, the husband would only be bound if he has ratified this commitment by a symbolic act, by a kinyan, or has set it down in a contract, or has confirmed it in some similar manner, as will be explained in the laws concerning buying and selling. Nizgar shabetoch hashanim shekibel al atzmo lozen esbito v'niseis la'acher upaska gam imo sheyizan osa habas kach v'kach shanim lo yom arishan im tovel levesi azuna ela molech mezan aseh limkom shehi sham imo. If the wife is divorced within the period of years that he had obligated himself to maintain her daughter, and if the wife then marries another man and makes a similar agreement with him that he is to maintain her daughter for such and such a number of years, the first husband may not say, if she will come to my house, I will feed her. Rather, he must convey her maintenance to the place where her mother is residing. Nor may the two husbands say, we will maintain her jointly. No, that can't be done that way. Rather, one must provide maintenance for her. One has to provide all the food, while the other must pay her the monetary equivalent of her maintenance, of the food. Halacha Yudches, the 18th paragraph, and the final one of this chapter. Niseis habas betolos manzeh, habal chai b'mzonoseha, ubal le'ima shneim kol echavecha nosim l'demei mezonos. If this daughter marries within that period of time, her own husband is liable to feed her, as the law is concerning every husband and wife, and each of her mother's husbands must pay her the monetary equivalent of her maintenance. Meisu elu shepasku lozen osa, im kana miyadam, o shechiv atzma b'shtar, harizek kabalcha o b'shtar, v'terefes mzonoseha menechaseim, hamishibadim, atzov hazman shepasku. If the stepfathers who had agreed to feed her should die, then it depends. If they ratify the agreement by a symbolic act, by a kinyan, or bound themselves by a contract, she is in the position of any other creditor, holding a deed of indebtedness, and has the right to seize her food, the money that goes for her food, out of property mortgage, that is property that had already been sold, until the termination of the period agreed upon to feed her. If the agreement was made at the time of the betrothal, and there was no kinyan, no symbolic act, the matter is regarded as something that was not intended to be set down in writing, and she cannot therefore seize any property for her maintenance. That means she cannot collect from any of the property that were sold. Any of the properties that were sold is out of the range that she has a right to collect from. However, she could collect from the heirs if they haven't sold the property, just as is the case with any person who borrows money, with only witnesses that see the loan taking place, but it is not put into writing in a contract. They are entitled, the creditors are entitled, to collect from non-mortgage property, that is, property that was not sold. Property that was sold is out of reach for them, and likewise in this case as well. With this, the Rambam concludes Perik Shlosha Ve'esrim Mehilchas Ishus, chapter 23 of the Laws Concerning Marriage.